This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Ultimate Marvel Podcast, episode 20, and this is our official Spider-Man Homecoming review.
Let's go!
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, just whatever a Spider-Man.
Spider-Man from YouTube. You're on the ceiling. Are you an Avenger?
Basically.
I don't think this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me.
Can I try the suit on?
Ta-da.
In the chills of the night, I'm the scene of a crime. Like a streak of light, you rise in time.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Oh my gosh, we have a good one for you guys today. We are going to be talking all about the hot new movie that just came out, Spider-Man Homecoming. And before we even say anything about it, I need to go ahead and give a big fat spoiler warning.
This is your official spoiler warning.
That's right. Because we are going to have full-on spoilers of this movie. And so if you haven't seen it, just go ahead and turn this off. And then come back after you've seen it and listen. Last week, Ronnie had Daryl Taylor and Nick Whitmore on. They did an awesome sort of deep dive into the historical character of Spider-Man. And we're going to have those guys back on once again to review this movie. First up, to give his thoughts, is Nick Whitmore, man. What's up, Nick?
Hello, hello.
Before we even get into this, there was some, like, pretty sad news, speaking of death, that Stan Lee's wife just passed away at age 93, which kind of is pretty sad. I've heard in the past that she was sort of one of the reasons he stuck with Marvel. Well, not Marvel, but he stuck with comics early on because he wanted to get out of it completely. Because they wanted him to do content and action content, and he wanted to develop characters. And she was the one that pushed him to say, hey, just stick with it and do your stuff. And if, you know, do it the way you want to do it. And if they hate it, they'll just fire you. But who cares? Because you're thinking about quitting anyways. So he took her advice, and that's how this whole Marvel thing came about long term. I think the first book he said he did after he got that advice was Fantastic Four. So wow. That, everything was built off of that. Anyways, that's a bummer to start an episode on.
Well, still, it's pretty big news.
Yeah. So anyway, let's talk some Spider-Man Homecoming, man. This was a good movie, man, and I've never been a huge Spider-Man follower. But still, I wanted this movie to succeed, primarily because, despite my own preferences, like, Spider-Man has always been sort of the face of Marvel, in my opinion. At least as far as mass appeal goes during my lifetime. So here's what I was thinking about. Like, if we talk about DC, they have their big three, right? Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. And during my lifetime, it seems like Spider-Man is the only Marvel character that really rivals those three for popularity. Now, I'm not talking about right now with the everything that's going on with the movies. I'm talking about before that, in the last, you know, 40 years. If I had to rank the most popular superheroes of all time, I would go Batman, number one. I'm curious if you would, how your list would be also. But I'd do Batman number one. I think I would put Spider-Man number two. And then I would put Superman three, Wonder Woman four. And then five, I don't know, maybe Hulk is at five. Does that seem right?
Not for me, but...
No? How would you do it?
It would be Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, Wolverine.
Wolverine 4?
Yeah, because...
Wow.
Especially in... I mean, you're younger than I am. but the amount of heat that he had and sustained and how many books he went into mm-hmm. can only be rivaled by Batman.
Interesting.
And I don't see that tailing off. For God's sakes. I mean, look at the movies. Holy Christ.
And who would be five? Wonder Woman?
I think she always gets the short end of the stick. That's why whenever they say DC's powerful trinity, I don't ever see DC promoting Wonder Woman the way they should.
Huh. Well, yeah, I bet you they will be now.
I hope so. I absolutely hope so. But I would love it to be Fantastic Four, but that is never the case.
Right.
It's the first family of comics, and it is that's a long shadow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sad. Very sad.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. I think so. You put Wolverine up there, and now I get it based on the comics. I think in my head, I was going even as a little kid, like when your parents buy you something, a lunchbox or something with a superhero on it. It was never Wolverine. So I think we took two different angles at it.
I don't know. Were you getting lunchboxes in like 95?
No. Come on.
Because I'm sure I'm sure Wolverine was put on many lunchboxes.
I think I'm
the Punisher. The Punisher is very popular. But the Punisher's not ending up on lunchboxes.
No.
Unless they're just for a collector market. You know? Right. That doesn't happen.
Yeah. Well, we both had Spider-Man at the top of the Marvel list.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
He's pretty much a mainstay, and he in his day he had so many freaking comic books. Even he'll always be my hero.
Yeah.
And there were so many comic books coming out in his heyday, I couldn't afford them all. My right. babysitting and allowance money would not afford me to buy even just all Spider-Man.
Right.
So that went by the wayside, and you had to pick and choose.
Yeah. So what was your quick sort of overall opinion of this movie? Good? Bad? I don't think you're going to say bad.
No, I am not going to say bad. And I'll be honest with you, I was the one person in the audience for Amazing Spider-Man 2 that walked out of it. And believe me, I was shaking my head. I was the only person in that theater on a Friday night. I was the only person. And I walked out of that theater shaking my head like, what happened? But there were still parts of it that were like, that was fun.
Okay, you're talking about the Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
So this version, just quick overview, this version was the closest adaptation to the comic book.
Okay.
And it had parts that they might have been used somewhere in comics, but there were parts that it was very modern and nothing ruffled my feathers.
Yeah.
Like you look at some other comic book adaptation movies and people are like, Batman doesn't have any eyeballs and his eyes light up like flashlights. What the F? And I guess I can see that, but it okay. like for me, this movie, like every little bit was just like, that's sort of cool. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Like it was never like, it never took me out of the movie that I was like, oh, give me a break. Let me throw my soda at the screen.
Right.
How about you?
Oh, man. No, I totally agree with what you said. It was good to me. It wasn't great. Like, so far in 2017, I think Wonder Woman, Logan, and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 were better movies. And I'm not saying that to slight it, because I think 2017 has been a really strong superhero movie year. Like, I'd even say possibly the best ever so far. And definitely, like, if Ragnarok and Justice League... Is Justice League 2017? I don't keep track of it. But if those turn out to be as good as they look, then 2017 just blowing every other year out of the water. But
this was really a sink or swim year. This was going to let every movie studio know hey, we've hit our, for the common, you know, Joe public, this is going to let every studio know the audience has hit their limit. They don't want superhero movies anymore because there were so many of them coming out.
Right.
If any of them bombed, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Because then all those development deals will either dry up unless they're already filming and they've already thrown too much money at it.
Yeah. But they pulled it off. I mean, this, I haven't, there hasn't, in my opinion, there hasn't been a bad movie yet.
Ragnarok's the best trailer. That is the movie I'm most excited for.
Yeah, me too. And I'm worried about it because Thor, the first two just weren't that good, or at least they weren't on par with the other, a lot of the top tier Marvel MCU stuff, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So they really need to turn around, but it sounds like Marvel's really pumping a lot into that movie to make it good. So,
Jack, I think we're going to have a Siskel and Ebert discussion coming up. Just to let you know.
Yeah, sort of feels like it.
I'm going to have to completely disagree with you. I think Spider-Man, my wife was like, the comedy, there was a lot of comedy, but it didn't hit for her.
Hmm.
And I told her, for the tone of the character in the movie, the comedy was hitting home runs left and right. It is not going to be a goofy movie like Guardians of the Galaxy, but it was damn near a perfect comic book movie.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that
a
really made it that...
A Spider-Man comic book movie.
I would say comic book movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because the musical score felt majestic.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful. And it was that Michael Giancana, who does all the J.J. Abrams movie scores and television scores.
Hmm.
And it just, it was powerful. It was really, really cool the way they used instrumentation. And there were parts to, like, Wonder Woman that had a beautiful musical score, but there were parts that that movie didn't have that, and it sort of took me out of it. Like, I want it to be, I want it to take you to places. And a lot of the modern superhero films, they almost feel like, hey, here's a cool, quippy dance song that we're going to throw in here because there's going to be a neat action scene coming up. Oh, and here it is.
Right.
And Spider-Man had a little bit of that, but I also liked that it was all based around his homecoming dance, and the homecoming dance was 80s theme. So you got these really, like, fairly well-known 80s songs.
Yeah.
That I'm sure people will know. I mean, just hearing English Beat Save It For Later was enough for me to be like, oh, hell yeah, that's a good song.
Right.
But the majority of the music was that score. And the score fits so well.
Yeah.
It was the best Marvel comic book movie I've seen probably since Winter Soldier. And Winter Soldier also had a really good score.
Yeah.
Because it easily beat Avengers 2, Civil War, Guardians 2. At least for me, it knocked it out of the park.
Wow. Wow. That's interesting. Well, so Winter Soldier, that was 2014. That was a really strong year, too.
Because
that was the first Guardians movie. And X-Men Days of Future Past was that year. And ironically... Wow. The movie he walked out of, which sucked. Amazing Spider-Man 2 was that year, which
I watched the whole thing. I watched everything, every bit of Amazing Spider-Man 2. Only when I was walking out by myself was I like, what is that? Whose Spider-Man is that? And I like Andrew Garfield. I thought he was a great Peter Parker.
Oh, no.
But he was playing too young. Like, just play your age, dude. Right. Just play your age. That would have been a good character for him.
Yeah. Well, so that's the thing. So, because I think that's one of the big questions, like, Spider-Man fans will have going into this movie is, was it better than the Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield movies? Because they weren't that. I mean, those were fairly recent. They were in the last 10 years, all of them. So, and in my opinion, I think Tom Holland, and this is sort of reiterating what you already said, but one of the things I liked a lot about it is that I thought he captured the Spider-Man that I sort of remember as a kid far better than Andrew Garfield or Tobey Maguire did. And not to sell it short, but what I mean is sort of that playful, that young, playful energy, lots of one-liners. And it might just be because Tom Holland is a kid. He's like 20 years old. Whereas Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire were trying to sell you that they were like these high school kids.
Yeah, I think he filmed it when he was 19, and I think he just turned 21.
Yeah.
But Jack, everybody in that movie, and I even told my wife, you watch like Beverly Hills 90210. You watch these shows that are supposedly done in high school. How many people look like they're in high school? Right. This entire cast looked like they could be in high school. Oh, and even the ones that looked a little older, you believe that they're seniors.
Yeah.
Like, I could see them being freshmen in college.
It could totally have been a CW show, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. And it sort of was.
Yeah.
But in a great way.
Yeah.
And even when Tom Holland is acting without the mask, his face was so expressive.
Yeah.
And he showed you the nerd. He showed you when he was talking to Betty?
Yeah.
The main Brandt. Lead. Yeah.
Oh no, it wasn't Betty.
No, sorry. What was her name? Shoot. I'm having a mental fart.
Liz.
But Liz. He finally tells her that he's interested in her, and she goes, "I know, you're horrible at lying." And then the scene could have ended there, but then to have him walk by her and sort of mug at the camera, like, "Oh my god, what just happened?"
Yeah,
like that was such. And those are the Peter Parker moments. And I even went talking with Ronnie and Daryl; those are the moments that I want.
Right.
That's my Peter Parker.
Right.
And sealing up the ship, holding the ship together. Like, that's the type of stuff. Like, he goes into danger knowing that, hey, maybe his spider sense, he might be able to avoid a few things, but he wasn't the ballerina that Peter Parker is now as an adult. He gets knocked around a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was so energetic and exciting for me, and the comedy did not fall flat for me whatsoever. The comedy was fantastic. His friend was hilarious. May was great.
Yeah,
some of the spoilers I don't really want to spoil, but I will happily spoil the. Okay, this I don't know how you are, Jack, but this one scene was better than I would say 98% of scenes that you can take out of superhero films. When Michael Keaton welcomes Peter in to take his daughter to homecoming dance, he's chaperoning them to the dance and dropping them off.
Right.
And just by happenstance, their dialogue gets to, there's a point where Peter is in a scene and Liz says, "Yeah, but you cut out quick. I don't know where the heck you disappeared to." And then she says it again in a different scene. And the freaking acting on Michael Keaton when he's looking in that rearview mirror at Tom Holland.
Yeah.
Realizing that's a weird coincidence. Wait, it happened again? And then looking in that mirror and like, "I know you, mother effer. You're Spider-Man."
Right.
Like the tension in that car, that entire scene when it was those two, just like him talking at him, calling him nicknames for accidentally forgetting his name. Like that whole scene was so perfectly written. And the scene in the car was so freaking tense. I would take that over 98% of action scenes.
Huh?
that one little scene for
Michael,
in my opinion, only that one little scene in the car that lasted for about a minute and a half. That scene was better than, I would say, the entirety of Avengers 2. Like it so worked.
Yeah.
And I did not expect it in a superhero film.
Michael Keaton was excellent.
Oh,
the whole entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you felt for him. There was motivation behind his character. It wasn't just a money-grubbing villain.
Yeah. Well, and one of the post-credit scenes actually sort of nods toward that, which gives you the impression that, okay, the first post-credits, I assume you watched them, right?
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah. The first one where he's they show Michael Keaton in the in prison, and the guy's trying to get information about Peter Parker, and he won't give it to him. Which,
you mean the Scorpion?
Yeah.
I know. When they just said his name, but they didn't like mention any character, I was like, all right, he's going to be good. Bring him into the second one.
Right.
And I like the third. I like the second post-credit scene. I know a lot of people were down on it.
I loved it.
I don't get how people were like, they were all right.
Well, like, I mean,
no, they both were awesome.
So I thought the people that would complain about the post-credit scenes are exactly who the second post-credit scene was designed for. Because he's pretty much like making fun of people for being impatient, sitting around waiting for post-credit scenes. And then expecting some huge payoff. Like, come on.
Marvel has trained us.
Yeah. I mean, if you're sitting around watching credits in order to get to a scene, you take what you can get. You don't go into that expecting that to make the movie. You know, if it's relevant, great. If it's irrelevant, you know, whatever. That's not why you were there.
There's not going to be an M. Night Shyamalan twist on one of these things. Like, I don't know what people expect.
Yeah. Now, you did mention Peter Parker's character in the comics now a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the Peter Parker in the movie is that's what I want. Like, that's one of the reasons I haven't really gotten into the Dan Slott comics. Aside from, I have a hard time with Dan Slott, the way he writes in general, but I don't want a Spider-Man having kids and running a multinational corporation. Which is why I sort of gravitated towards the Miles Morales comics. Miles Morales is sort of like who Peter Parker used to be. Miles Morales now is sort of like that fun, energetic kid.
This could have been a Miles Morales film.
Yeah, it could have been. But Donald Glover.
I know where you're going with this. Yep, go ahead.
If I'm getting this correct, because there was a lot of, I mean, they really played on the comics a lot. But he was he was Miles Morales' uncle, right? Isn't that how it ties together? And they're planting a seed, just maybe in the future, there's some groundwork laid there for Miles Morales to show up?
That sounds right. And I know Donald Glover was really, on social media, he was really going after Marvel trying to get a role in a Spider-Man film. So everyone guessed it, he was going for the Peter Parker role, but who the hell cares? Donald Glover's a great actor.
Yeah, yeah, he's great. So, hey, back up for a second, because we talked about the other movies, but you didn't say, tell me how this compared to the Tobey Maguire. You mentioned Andrew Garfield, but how did this compare to the Tobey Maguire movies? Because those, at least the first two, are generally thought of as, like, you know, great, at least good to great Spider-Man movies. Spider-Man 1 and 2.
Yeah, Tobey Maguire, I love the first one, but it pretty much was just the origin story. There were parts that I certainly was like, okay, that's how you're doing the Green Goblin? Like, that just made no sense to me whatsoever. But his expressive acting, trying to show Peter Parker, the amazement in his eyes when stuff is happening to him,
yeah,
that was thoroughly enjoyable, but it quickly went downhill for 2 and 3 for me, because I think he just became too old.
He did. I never liked Tobey Maguire as an actor. I really didn't like him as Spider-Man, to be honest. He seemed... I get it that, like, Peter Parker is sort of quirky when he's himself and he's not Spider-Man, but he just seemed like he was too quirky for the character. I don't know, man. Something. But still, I felt those first two movies had a lot of substance.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one thing that I felt was missing from this movie. Like, there just wasn't a whole lot of story there. It was characterization, it was action, it was comedy, but there wasn't a story that I felt like I could really sink my teeth into.
I think that was the bridge at the beginning. I think they wanted you, like, we all know you saw Civil War.
Yeah.
Here's a little, you know, bits from a different point of view, Spider-Man taking footage, creating a film of what he did when he went over and helped out the Avengers.
Which was awesome, I thought. I thought that was great.
Yeah, that was great.
Jump into it.
But I think that was sort of like, we're not going to give you an origin story. Everyone knows Batman's origin. Everybody knows Superman and Spider-Man's origin.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have to give you the Vulture? Yeah. People don't know that. General public, they don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
The way they did the Shocker, would I have loved to seen the brown and yellow uniform? Abso-freaking-lutely. And I was waiting for that. But the way they did that, that seemed pretty natural.
Yeah.
I thought it was more of a story between him and his classmates.
It was.
To me, Spider-Man will always be Peter Parker having a frantic social life and trying to keep that together, as well as, like, help out his aunt.
Yeah.
And strive to be the best student, the best person that he can,
right,
as well as juggling the superhero lifestyle.
Yeah.
So, and I thought they showed that mess really well,
mm-hmm,
without it being a mess. But there were parts to it, like him getting invited to Liz's party. Like, in high school, who doesn't want to be invited to the hot chick or the cool dude's party?
Yeah.
Everybody wants that invite. So it's amazing when, and they showed it a couple times, him in his costume wanting to go down there and interact with people, but knowing there's stuff happening outside this universe that could benefit me personally, but yeah. I have to go over there and save that person.
Yeah, I was caught up at that moment in the, like, the high school drama stuff. And I was like, screw the world. Let it burn. Go to the party.
I know. Same here. I was really hoping when he got that phone call from his buddy,
he'd,
I was
back,
really hoping that he would just swing back in there. Just once. Just swing back in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even like the elevator scene, like there were points where he, when he was trapped, like he really wanted to be there for that decathlon. For that academic decathlon.
Right.
And it's those motivations that just, like, that eats at me. Like, her party. Or you don't think Peter Parker wants to go put on swim trunks and hang out at a pool party? Like, of course he wants to do that.
Yeah.
But that's the part. And to be honest with you, I've seen Spider-Man's origin and read Spider-Man's origin so many times.
Right.
It's like Batman. For me, if there is never ever a scene of the pearls being pulled off and falling on the street and then Bruce's mother gets shot, I can die a happy man if I never have to see that scene again.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't try to do that. I mean, they've done it twice already in recent movies. Everybody knows that story.
Mm-hmm. That's why I don't need it for Spider-Man. I thought it was great that they tied it to Captain America Civil War.
This seems like something that, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe and now I guess DC movies can do, that, like, no other movies can do. And that is to, like, take a movie and show you Easter eggs or, in this case, it was flashbacks of Civil War, or flash forwards to set up other movies, whatever, and make you immediately, like, identify with a movie that you haven't even seen yet. You know, like, no other movie can do that. And it, for me, it works. I love that stuff. But because of all that stuff, Spider-Man Homecoming felt sort of like an Avengers spinoff to me.
Oh.
And that's what it felt like. Like, I told Ronnie, so I made the comment that I made earlier to Ronnie online that it felt a little bit light on substance. And he said, oh, so it was basically like Guardians of the Galaxy. which I have a problem with already, because I thought Volume 2 had more. I have this thing. I think people say it doesn't have substance because it's funny. It's comedy. And all the substance is wrapped around jokes. But all this. Anyways, this isn't a Guardians of the Galaxy review. We already did that. But like,
you so wanted to be Guardians of the Galaxy.
I don't know. I did. I don't know why.
Put Spider-Man in space, darn it.
Well, the stuff with his father and Yondu and like the family stuff with Gamora and Nebula, I thought that was meaty. But anyways, this felt nothing like Guardians of the Galaxy to me, like, at all. It felt like an Avengers spinoff. And even from the very first scene that you already mentioned with the Civil War, so he does this Civil War home video scene, which I thought was super cool. Like, it's tapped back into a movie, and it's saying, okay, here's what Spider-Man was doing in the background when you watch Civil War that you didn't even know about. He's taking these home videos and doing this YouTube or whatever thing. And I thought that was super cool. Like, it set the... And it also sort of set the timing for this movie. So you don't have any... There was no question about when this occurred or whatever. This happened, like, directly after Civil War.
Yep. Yeah, the only time lapse that they had was 1 month. Because Peter was waiting around for the next event.
Right.
And he was being very impatient, waiting only a month.
Right.
That's why I understand what you're saying, that it feels like an offshoot. For me, it feels like a pocket universe. Because it never dealt really with New York. It was always much smaller in scale.
Yeah.
And I can appreciate that, because guess what? The way DC's going... Every movie, there's going to be a crisis that the entire world is going to collapse in on itself.
Right.
If these heroes don't save each other, you know, it's...
Well...
Like even Suicide Squad went beyond, like, oh my gosh. Not everything has to be you're saving the planet.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. Like, it's nice to have this small voice.
Yeah.
I guess that's why I liked Winter Soldier, because it was... much smaller of a scale.
Do you like the Netflix shows, Marvel shows?
I like the character building. But I sort of get burned out on them because it seems like they're stretching substance a little bit too much.
Yeah.
I mean, you have how many decades of Luke Cage, any of these characters, how many decades of information you could be gravitating on? Like, you don't have to stretch out an episode's worth of content through three episodes because you want to make it 17 episodes long. Like, you don't need to do that.
Yeah, well, I bring that up because I don't remember who it was that said it, but somebody from Marvel compared what Sony's planning. So Sony and Marvel had this whole back and forth thing about whether Venom was going to be in the MCU. And finally, I think after they went back and forth, Marvel just said, hey, it's going to be in the same universe, but it's going to be sort of a pocket. And they compared it to the Netflix stuff, where they're not in the big events. They're off doing their own thing in this sort of corner of the world, right? And that's, I think, where they're going with the Sony Spider-Man stuff, And I assume Peter Parker will be the exception. Like, he's going to cross back and forth. He's in Infinity War, so
that,
he'll cross back and forth.
He'll definitely cross back and forth, but there's no way you're going to miss that that wasn't a Sony movie. Like, it was mainly Marvel, but Sony was right there with all their logos and icons.
Right.
It just wasn't. It was like Amazing Spider-Man. That was a Sony movie.
Yeah.
And you knew it.
Yeah. So that way, this is really nitpicky, but that was sort of the negative for me. Is it felt like the tie-ins in Homecoming were trying really, really hard to piggyback off of the MCU in order to help this movie. There was nothing, like, all of this stuff was sort of coming, it was all sort of flashback stuff, and let's take from the MCU to help this movie, but there was nothing to help push the MCU forward, which, for example, Ragnarok, it has been said that that's, like, drastically going to change the direction of the MCU, and it's going to build into Infinity War. You get nothing like that in Homecoming. It's the opposite. It's like, hey, we're going to grab whatever we can to make this movie good. You know
this
what I mean?
This is going to be a Siskel and Ebert episode.
Yeah, and I'm trying to be careful because I don't want to be like Debbie Downer. Like, I enjoyed this movie.
No. I just disagree. I feel like this is more of Marvel letting people know, hey, Spider-Man's part of our universe. He's not over here with those X-Men films that we can't touch right now, those Fantastic Four films that we can't touch right now. He's not doing that. He's here. Mm-hmm. But instead of and even my wife's like, why didn't they bring all the Avengers in? And I didn't have an answer for that other than, why would they bring – this isn't an Avengers film, so why bring all these people in?
Because they're too expensive.
Exactly. But the way I looked at it, they wanted to give the viewer who's not a huge comic book fan, the majority of them, give that viewer touchstones to, hey, of course you know Robert Downey Jr., but remember Pepper? Yeah, there she is. She's in a scene.
Right.
Now she's out. Oh, remember Happy? Remember him? He was good.
Yeah.
And here he is again. You know, mm-hmm. like – They could have thrown Thor in there. You can't tell me that Marvel isn't like, let's back up the Brinks truck, because guess what? We don't want this to be another Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
We want this thing to succeed. But they didn't do that. That's why it feels like a pocket universe that Marvel just wanted to, like, let everyone know, no, you won't see Wolverine in this film. You won't see Mr. Fantastic. But you know what you're going to see? Here's Iron Man.
Yeah.
There's Giant Man. Oh, off in the distance, that's Black Panther. And it's not just a quick scene. It's like, I think it's just they want to give you touchstones to go to the next film.
Yeah. Well, and
I'm to be honest with you, Jack, I'm happy there was no Infinity Stones, because there's a lot of people that, like, want to make sure that those Infinity Stones that they've been tinkering out for the last few years, they don't want any viewer to forget about those.
Right.
Like my dad has no clue. I guarantee you, like, I bring him to most of these films. I guarantee you, if I brought up Infinity Stones to him, he'd have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
None whatsoever. Even though he's seen four films where they've shown up.
Most of the people that see these movies probably don't know what they are.
Right. Absolutely. And I guarantee you, some people won't even remember Gwyneth Paltrow was in Iron Man.
Right.
But hey, for the people that do, you remember back, like, oh my God, that was 4 years ago she was in Iron Man. Wow, that's neat. Okay.
Well, and that's the beauty of the Marvel Cinematic Universe in general, is that these movies can be very surfacey. And if you know nothing about the rest of the movies or about the comics or anything, at least most of them, you can go and say, okay, that was an enjoyable movie. I had a good time. But if you want to go deeper and you love all the Easter eggs, you can do that too. And that's where, like, and I think DC will get there eventually, but Marvel is really, that's stuff you used to get out of comic books that now we're getting out of movies. Like, we grew up reading comic books and reading these crossover events, and all this stuff would be interconnected. And you, then you get upset when it doesn't connect as well, like as you wish it would, mm-hmm. and it seems disconnected. Now we're getting that into movies, which has never been done before. And to me, that's just, it's just awesome.
And they're hitting home runs with all those connections. Yeah. It'd be
right.
I would say
they're hitting them better than they are in the comics.
Oh, absolutely. 90%. They're over 90% chance of somehow messing that up. It's just,
sure.
It's so easy. There's so many moving parts that, like, things just don't land well, or guess what? A movie flops and then they're screwed. And it's like, man, they are really nailing stuff. But yeah. At least they're keeping it for, with Marvel, Marvel isn't Marvel Comics. It's Marvel Entertainment at this point.
Yeah. Right.
And they're really nailing the entertainment part.
Right.
Because you can jump in as much as you want. Like my wife, Guardians of the Galaxy, all day long. She's there. Avengers, all day long. Doctor Strange, the only thing that pulled her into that was the lead character.
Huh.
Or the lead actor, I should say.
Yeah.
But like Black Panther, that's going to be a hard sell for her. Wonder Woman, absolutely not. Batman versus Superman,
oh, no interest. She didn't like Wonder Woman?
She never saw it.
Okay.
She saw the trailers for both of those DC movies, and she was like, no, I have no interest in... Because they
really?
All looked dark. They all...
Yeah.
There was nothing that resonated with her.
Gotcha.
And I even said, Wonder Woman's a strong, independent woman that kicks ass.
Yeah.
This should be right up your alley. And she goes, I'll watch it when it comes on DVD. She goes, I just don't want to waste my time right now.
Huh.
She doesn't care for comic books. She has no interest in comic books.
She likes the lighter, fun stuff.
Yeah, and she loves Robert Downey Jr. She
yeah.
loves Thor. She loves Benedict Cumberbatch. So
gotcha.
That's the thing that hooks her in, is the star power.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
But it really, I think, for me, the lightness and the fun factor of Spider-Man far outweighs any of the political stuff that Civil War was trying to do. And I mean, Jack, you know me, like Winter Soldier is freaking high up on the list for me regarding superheroes.
Hmm.
But even that was just like, there were parts to it where I just didn't want to see the Avengers anymore. I was just like, can I see a Winter Soldier and Captain America film now? And
well,
I didn't want to see an Avengers film. I was just like, I felt so burned out on it.
Yeah. Well, you're getting ready to see Avengers with like every character that's ever existed in the Marvel Cinematic Universe in one film.
If they can pull this off, at this point, I would say this is at 98%. There's no way this is going to fall other than fall flat on its face.
It's either going to be great or horrible.
They just have too many, but I mean, I said that before when they were trying to connect up the entire film universe. I'm like, there's no way this is going to be able to be pulled off. And
yeah.
when they announced, what was it, 67 heroes showing up in this?
Yeah.
How can that not be a cluster? How can they do that?
Even
with the most like credible ensemble, you could have Robert Altman, who's known for ensemble casts, directing it.
Yeah.
And that would be freaking hard to pull off. That's just so many characters.
It is.
Unless you're going to tell me like, oh, 25 of the 60 are just flybys in the background.
That's what it has
to
be.
And I'm like, okay, that you pared it down just enough.
It has to be. That's what it there's no other way to make it all, to fit it all in and make it all relevant. You got to have some, just a lot of totally... people that are there, just there to show up and to stand there in the background.
I mean,
the cool part is they can do some cool character stuff that they've never been able to do before, like have Star-Lord and Captain America in a scene together if they choose to, and
mm-hmm.
make that really cool, because that just hasn't had an opportunity to exist at all. But they just can't do that with everybody. You know what I mean? They just can't.
Can I throw out a little thing that I've been batting around with regarding this upcoming movie, which I understand it's a Spider-Man Homecoming podcast. Infinity. The first one. With the 60 people. 60 characters. I've been... And you tell me how where you're going to fall. I know where I'm going to fall. The one thing I hate about films or books or comics is the flip to the end and, oh my God, it's all a dream. I hate those type of endings. It's almost the writer writing themselves into a corner that they can't back out of.
Yeah.
And especially with the Infinity Stones, it seems like a lot of poor writers have written themselves into a corner of how do we defeat a person with all that power? Right. And then all of a sudden it becomes almost like a dream, like, catch 22.
Yeah.
With all of these characters, if they show a montage of Thanos defeated, like, here's all the defeated characters, boom, 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 boom. And that's how they show 80% of the characters out of the 67. 80% of them are just quick cuts, all of them laying dead, or this is how we defeated all of them. Boom, 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 boom. Is that going to be satisfactory? For me, I know it's not. No way. It'd be great to see everyone laying in rubble, but it was just like the X-Men film, Days of Future Past, where they showed that. And it's great for me, but for my wife, she had no clue who these people were, nor should she care. Any audience member, they don't care about that.
Yeah. Well, you got to also remember that Thanos is my all-time favorite supervillain, and he's probably going to be front and center in this movie, so I'm going to be biased to begin with. But
so you don't care if 50% of the characters are just he just wipes them out with one stroke of the hand and boom, they're done.
Well, so okay,
you got to show the power some way.
Well, okay, the actress that plays Gamora, Zoe Saldana, I think I'm saying that right. She sort of led everybody to believe, she had a sort of slip up in an interview and led everybody to believe that the second film is Infinity Gauntlet. She called it Infinity Gauntlet. And if that's the case, then Thanos is not going to have the power to do something like that until the second movie. The first movie, I don't know what it's going to be about, because Infinity War in the comics was a backup story to Infinity Gauntlet, and they're reversing that somehow. And it wasn't even an Avengers story to begin with, so I'm not really sure what they're doing. But my opinion, from everything I've heard, I don't think the first movie he's going to have the full Infinity Gauntlet. I don't think he's going to have all the gems. A matter of fact, when they get to Infinity War, I don't even know if he'll have any of the gems, because as far as we know right now, he hasn't collected any of them. And they haven't even revealed all of them. I assume they'll reveal one in Ragnarok, and then we'll have seen them all. So I don't think Infinity War is going to be just a story to build up to Infinity Gauntlet, to the second movie, but it's going to be something else. I don't think it's going to be a movie, though, where he has all the power to do that yet. I think somehow it's going to introduce Thanos as this super powerful character, but he's not going to be a godlike character where he can just wipe everybody out yet. I think that's going to be the storyline in the second movie. But back to your question. In Civil War, they introduced more characters than they had previously in one movie. And some of them were really short scenes. And they made it work. Actually, I thought that was the best part of Civil War. That fight scene, I think, was most people's favorite part of that movie. When Spider-Man's fighting with Captain America, then he's fighting with the Winter Soldier. Sure. And they're going back and forth and and having all those people using their different abilities in sort of comical ways was sort of the cool part of that movie. I think they can do it again in Infinity War. I think they've had a lot of time to plan this, and they have to know that just having Drax in the background standing behind Star-Lord when Star-Lord does something significant isn't enough to make that relevant. That he has to have some interaction, and I don't know how they're going to pull it off.
Can I give you my theory on that?
Yeah.
I think Infinity War has nothing to do with Infinity War. I think that's just a title. I think Infinity War is going to be I think it's going to be a comic book movie that is going to be two movies separated. So they're going to be battling a villain. I would say the last third of it, Thanos will come in. My guess is the Infinity War is going to be them battling to gather up the stones, because whoever wants those stones. Right. And as soon as they gather them up, that's when Thanos is going to come in, grab them, and it will be an Empire Strikes Back moment that will end on a down moment that will be the springboard for here's Infinity Gauntlet. I don't think it has anything to do with Infinity War. I think they're just using that.
Just borrowing the title?
They're not going to call it Collecting the Infinity Gems. That doesn't really have the ring to it that everybody wants it to have.
Yeah.
At least that's my hope, because guess what? I don't know if I want two back-to-back films battling Thanos.
I guess I'm hoping that, and I think that's, you're probably right. That's the most likely scenario, at least to some degree. They've said at some point that these two movies aren't related. So it's not a part one and a part two. That's what they said initially. And then they came, they backed that up saying, okay, that was because we didn't have a title in place yet. So we, but really in reality, these are two separate Avengers movies.
Right.
Now that there's, I don't know, the movies are really close together. And it's sort of becoming harder to believe that, but I still wonder why they would push so hard to push that point. I guess I'm hoping that Infinity War, there's some story that has nothing to do with collecting Infinity Gems also.
Really?
As a part of this.
I love the collection as well as the separation of Infinity Gems. Always have.
Right. Because if that's all it is, then it really is a part one and a part two movie.
Oh, for sure, and I think it will be. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, let's put it this way. Robert Downey Jr. is looking pretty old right now.
Yeah.
Look at all of the Avengers. They're all getting pretty old right now.
Right. And Chris Evans is, I think he said he's not renewing his contract.
Sure. Yeah,
so Captain America's done after this.
Hey, I think everyone has to get a facelift and has to let a new actor get in there.
Yeah.
And my wife's like, oh my God, they can't do that. And I was just like, what do you want, a 65-year-old Tony Stark? No, they have to get somebody else in there.
Riri, I think it's easy. They've already set the stage.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. One of my favorite points with Homecoming, and I'm sure this will ruffle the feathers of a lot of Big Two fans, I loved the diversity. I loved how young everyone was, and I loved the diversity. And
yeah.
I think it was a missed point not making him Miles Morales or not making Peter Parker someone who isn't white. That's okay by me. I'm okay with that. Captain America can be a woman. James Bond can be a woman. I don't care. It can work. Like, you leave that up to the casting person, because guess what, they sort of know what they're doing.
Yeah, Yeah. Well, so before we end, let me ask you what you thought about this.
Sure.
We already talked about it, just not specifically. But all of the characters in this movie, his classmates, whether they were like relevant or not, were taken strictly from the comics. So they had Flash Thompson, which was Peter Parker's longtime high school rival. They pulled him directly out of the comics. Liz, who I didn't know a lot about before I read up on it after this movie, but she supposedly was introduced in Amazing Fantasy number 15 before even Peter Parker. So she predates him maybe by like a page, but still. They had characters like, so me and Ronnie were talking about this, and Betty Brant was in it, even though I don't remember anything significant, really that significant about her in the movie. Cindy Moon.
She was the reporter.
Right.
The female reporter that came on two or three times for the high school television show.
Yeah. They also had Cindy Moon in it, who, in the comics, she's Silk, right? She becomes Silk in the comics, right? Mm-hmm. Which was really weird. But in the movie, she's just another, I don't know. There's nothing that significant about her. It was kind of cool to me how they pulled all these characters, whether they had significance or not, they relied on characters from the comics, even dating back to early, early comics.
Well, how about the friend with the academic who sat with Peter and his friend at the lunchroom table?
Oh.
The woman that at the end she's elected head of the academic team, and she said, "Oh, call me MJ."
Yeah, so that was interesting, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And even my wife, who's never read a comic in her life, even she goes, "It was neat how they brought in MJ. That I didn't expect."
Well, I did the same thing.
Even she's looking at that like, obviously she's not, you know, Mary Jane, but a completely different name, but just calling her MJ in a right. Spider-Man movie. Even my wife's like, that'll be an interesting relationship when those two get together.
Sure. Sure. They totally did that to hint at like a much larger role in the second Spider-Man movie.
And but she was fun.
Yeah. She was great. She was sort of the one that they didn't really, get into her character a whole lot, but you sort of were sitting there saying like, hey, she's way cooler than the girl you're going after.
Well, that's how it always is.
Yeah. But I did the same thing your wife did, though. When they said MJ, I thought, oh, okay. Because I hadn't read up about her character much before I saw it. And I thought, okay, that's Mary Jane.
Yep.
But it's not. Right?
But guess what? Flash Thompson, he was the big jock bully. And now they made him Peter's rival.
Yeah.
At first I was very taken back because he was not like Flash Thompson. He was not this big muscle bound dude.
Right.
And that's sort of, at first I was like, that's the one miscast. I don't know if I like that, but his character was so Flash Thompson, just needling Parker, putting him down, making fun of him.
Typical
and
bully.
To be honest with you, the best joke in there, which I thought in the audio was very subtle, but when he first walked by Peter and called him Penis Parker,
right?
I was like, holy shit, I've never thought of that, never heard anything, never heard anyone call a Peter penis. But good God, that was funny.
Yeah.
It was very well written, and I've never watched any of the other director's films, but now I sort of want to go back. Knowing that he's directed something with Kevin Bacon in it, I'm like, I would sort of watch that.
Yeah.
And of course, in my head, I'm thinking, why hasn't Kevin Bacon been in a superhero film? Like, he'd be a good villain.
Because he's getting too old.
At Michael Keaton.
Right.
That MF-er's old. Every line on his face was in high def. But good God, could he act. Every time Keaton did a smirk, I was like, oh, this is why I love me some Michael Keaton.
Yeah. So hold on, but back up a second.
Sure.
Why not Mary Jane though? So what the explanation is that she's playing Michelle Jones, who mm-hmm. was also one of Peter's classmates from the comics. But when she calls herself MJ, that everybody thinks of Mary Jane, and they're playing her role like they're putting her in a position where she's going to be playing the role of Mary Jane. That's at least what it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
Why is she not Mary Jane? That's what I don't get. Why is she?
I think it was a great swerve for the audience. How many comic book reading people are not expecting stuff like that? Like, you all, I expect to see Gwen Stacy. I expect to see Mary Jane Watson. And when neither of them are in the first Spider-Man film, I like that. Yes, yeah. Like, I wanted more of that. And then at the end, when they threw in the MJ, I'm like, somebody has been reading Spider-Man comic books. Like, they made that work really well.
Yeah.
And the friend was a great comic timing.
Now the friend, hold on, that was interesting too, because he's Ned, who again they're pulling from the comics, but he looks like Miles Morales' best friend from the comics, right?
Yeah, sort of a
heavy set like Asian guy.
Absolutely.
So that was an interesting twist, too. Like, I was wondering why they call him Ned. Why don't they call him, what's his name? Gonki? Gonke? How do you pronounce it? Gonki.
I'm not even going to attempt to.
I think it's Gonki.
Sure.
But they went with Ned, which is Peter Parker's best friend.
Hey, guess what? If Spider-Man hits home runs with this new version, what's to stop them for bringing Miles Morales in? You know, like, hey, you could have two Spider-Men going around. People are going to be upset by that?
What's stopping them in my mind is that you just cast Peter Parker as like a 19-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally a 19-year-old kid. He's going to have some growing up to do before you can start introducing more Miles Morales. Otherwise, you're going to have two of the exact same character.
Yep. True. Hey, how were you with the three Spider-Man costumes shown?
Oh, I didn't like the last one.
Interesting. Okay.
Was the last... Now, I couldn't really tell because of the lighting. I thought the last one was the black costume. Was it?
No.
Or was it just really dark lighting?
It was really dark. It's the one that has the yellow accents around the spider. I want to say it was, good God, when it was during an event that he put it on.
Yeah.
I want to say Civil War, maybe. No, Civil War was the one that had the mechanical like spider limbs that came out of his back. But yeah, it was during one of his events.
I thought it was so dark. The scene was so dark. At first, I thought it was the black Miles
Morales
suit.
Were you watching
it
in 3D?
No.
And it was black for you. Wow.
Well, it looked black at first, and then I started saying, okay, maybe it's not. Maybe the lighting's just dark. I was questioning myself, but at first it looked black, and I was like, I hope they're not introducing the Ultimate Spider-Man suit, which didn't seem appropriate at all. I like the suit he wore. I like the suit he had on, the one that Tony Stark gave him originally. That suit seemed great. I mean,
and
it was
when he
way
took
more
off the training wheels,
It was way more high tech than anything. So, you know, so that's interesting also. They did some things with the character. Like the webbing has been different in each iteration of the Spider-Man movies.
For sure.
And then also his spider sense has been different. Mm-hmm. Like he doesn't have spider sense right now, which he did in... I know he did in the Tobey Maguire movies.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't at all now. And I'm wondering what their thinking was. Why? I don't know.
Maybe it's like a mutant ability. It will come with age.
Yeah.
He's only a sophomore in high school.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's probably just starting puberty. As May even said in the car with Ned.
Well, even the web shooting, should that be mechanical or should it be something occurring from his... Or should it be a superpower?
You know what? My fandom and my reading with Spider-Man, it's gone back and forth. I can't even definitively say in my head what I prefer. But him popping out those cartridges and putting in new ones was really cool. Him having the suit choose which of, what was it, 597 different variations of like webbing styles.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. And believe me, when he did the web taser, I was like, this is I can freaking get behind this high tech look that he has going on. And to be honest with you, when the suit's talking to him, that takes away from all the BS bombs going off. Oh my gosh, crazy action scene that we've seen 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And that works because
it was a Tony Stark invention.
Absolutely. And guess what? Spider-Man, you even go back to the 70s, like he chitter chattered constantly.
Right.
Yeah, so him talking to somebody to talk to made sense. Yeah. And you're not getting all this horrible 70s comic-y, jokey dialogue, even though I love it. Dude, I'm a sucker. I'm a sucker for it. Like, there is not one bit of, like, comedy stuff that he used to do back in the day. The modern telling, some of it's iffy, and that just depends on the writer. But you go back in the day, even the stuff that falls flat, I'm still like, this is excellent. Yeah. The only thing that the modern brought in for me that was like, oh, that this was missing in the 70s and 80s was the actual villains talking back to him like, what's up with all these jokes? Jiminy Christmas, you talk up a storm.
Yeah.
And I sort of like that about the modern telling of Spider-Man. I dig that.
Yeah, I like it. I like that about Spider-Man's character. You know who also does that, but I usually don't like it, is Deadpool.
Oh, I hate Deadpool. Deadpool is on my S list. I have other than the movie, but reading Deadpool, mamacita, I cannot get through one comic book.
I can't either.
Yeah, it's too much.
It's weird because like Spider-Man shows up and starts throwing around one-liners, and I'm like, oh, that's great. When Deadpool shows up and starts throwing around one-liners, I'm like, oh, this is horrible.
Unless it's, what is it, Uncanny X-Force, if I remember? That's the only Deadpool version that I can even stomach.
Yeah.
But I love the high-tech outfit. And to be honest with you, this is something I shouldn't like. Like, for all of the gadgets that he was using when he was concealed, when he did the Spider-Man flashlight on the wall, I was like, put that on your belt. Like, that's what I want to see. Like, that was a Steve Ditko thing. And the webs becoming like a squirrel, you know, the webs in between his, like, arms and ribs.
Yeah.
That's such a Ditko thing. And to see him actually use those as like a gliding apparatus, that just made me sing. It was so fantastic. Even his front spider icon mm-hmm. on his chest, even for that to break off and be a mini, like, surveillance hovercraft.
Yeah.
Like, that shouldn't work. But for whatever reason, I was freaking bought into it. I'm just like, yeah, why wouldn't Peter have high-tech stuff? Whether right. he invented it or he got it from Tony Stark. Why wouldn't he have that stuff?
Yeah.
Everything worked. For me, even the high-tech suit where he says, I should get closer so I can hear what they're saying. And then the suit responds, oh, you want to see closer? How about if I amplify this? Oh, you want to hear more? How about if I – and just like – it's interesting how they approach different situations with technology.
Right. Yeah.
Loved it. Yeah.
I don't know if I would have bought into it as much if it wasn't a Tony Stark thing. But being that Tony Stark is how they're bringing him into this universe, it totally made sense. And
don't forget, Peter's a genius.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, he's worked with Mr. Fantastic. Like,
right.
he is no slouch when it comes to using your brain power to defeat criminals or right. to upgrade your suit, your system, whatever.
Yeah.
He always thinks himself out of situations and problems. That's what's always fascinating about him. It's not just like the Hulk. The Hulk has his fists. And Peter Parker usually does not go that way.
Well, I do think so from like the scenes I've seen of Infinity War, it seems like it's always Star-Lord I see. I see a lot of Robert Downey Jr. and I see a lot of Tom Holland right there with him when I see these sort of offshoot videos that pop up on YouTube or whatever. So I have a feeling we're going to see him again in Infinity War to some significant degree.
I would hope so. I think he brings a nice youth. And I even told my wife, it's great that the Marvel U is trying to get away from all of our characters are between 28 and 38.
Oh, yeah. Give it some variety.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and they say the next phase is going to be a lot more emphasis on diversity. So there'll be a lot. You will see more females. Captain Marvel is going to be introduced in Infinity War.
Oh, hell yeah.
And I think she's going to take over that role of lead, the sort of lead role that Chris Evans has.
It's Brie Larson, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, which bring that on.
Right. I'm not crazy about her character in the comics, but I think I'm going to really like what Brie Larson's going to do.
If you don't like the characters, read The Secret Wars, Captain Marvel. That's a good version of the character.
Which one?
Secret Wars, that offshoot of Captain Marvel.
Okay, I can't remember if I read that or not.
It gives her more of a spin with the like military okay, leadership.
Right. Yeah,
it's a fun read. It's not gonna like blow your hat off, but yeah. That's the type of character that I want Captain Marvel to be.
Yeah,
I want her to be a leader. I want her to be just like Captain America, like. She knows how to get in there, assess a situation, and this is how we're going to handle it.
Right.
Oh, I can't wait. Brie Larson, so good. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, see, that's another thing. They're going to wait until Infinity War to introduce her. So it's sort of like even more expectation you're putting on this movie. You can't introduce a character in, like, just a brief, irrelevant scene, right?
Jack, can you... Go talk to your boy Stan Lee and get her into Ragnarok. Come on,
yeah.
Work your connections.
I wish I had some. Well, they got a. Who's in Ragnarok? Hulk is in Ragnarok. Doctor Strange is in Ragnarok. That's the only two I remember.
Yeah. And Jeff Goldblum. That's all you need to know.
Right.
Hell yeah.
Well, I'm glad you got into this. I'm glad you enjoyed the movie.
Oh, count me in. This is going to be a rewatcher for sure.
Yeah, definitely. It was good. And I hope all the listeners enjoyed this episode as well. And, you know, as always, if you want to reach us, you can hit us up on Twitter at Ultimate Marv Pod. It's not Marvel Pod. It's Ultimate MARVPOD. So make sure you also tune in to the next episode as well, because we have more Spider-Man Homecoming review for you. Part 2, this time with Daryl Taylor. So make sure you check that out as well. Peace.